how are you this evening, morning, John, my friend?
I'm very well. Thank you, friend Rex. Good to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us at such an early hour once again. And with the time that remains, we have about a minute and a half before the next break. Why don't you tell the folks listening out there in cyberspace what you have in store for us this time?
Well, I'm going to try something here that's never really been done before. I'm going to talk in two veins at once, in the magical and in the social political. Never tried to do this, but in our exchange, we're going to talk about the visionary practice of Sophianic wisdom and the revival or the recovery of the mysteries. But in the same time and in a parallel track, I'd like to jam with you, Frater X, on the imperative subject of social revolution, especially in America, because I strongly feel I am an American. I strongly feel America will lead the global revolution.
Well, would that it were so, John. I hope that's true.
Yeah, by example, if not anything else, yeah.
Tonight we're speaking with John Lamlash from MetaHistory.org. And John, you know, a lot of the people in the chat line are really excited about the concept of Gnosticism, and there's a lot of questions that are being thrown around in there about the Gnostic beliefs and the Gnostic ideas concerning Christianity. So that's something we want to probably cover tonight as well in our discussion.
Well, sure. Could I perhaps offer a couple of points of clarification going in?
That sounds like a great idea. Why don't you take that?
Well, when you read into Gnosticism from the scholarly sources, apart from me, it's going into a minefield of disinformation. So I want to warn people about that. I'm always happy when I hear that the intellectual and spiritual appetite is keen to learn about Gnosticism, because the nature and origin of the Gnostics and the downfall or destruction of their movement is one of the great chapters in the history of our species and explains a lot about why things have gone so badly wrong. But I just want to point out two factors to people who are perhaps newcomers to the scene. Gnostikos means basically someone who knows, who has a higher or a privileged knowledge. And the twist of it, the spin that you want to understand, is that gnosis is the knowledge that comes from the interaction between your own inner intuitive self and the great mystery of the world. So it's not a special elitist knowledge as far as its content is concerned, secret society and that kind of thing. It's not that at all. Gnosis is available to everyone. It is your deepest intuitive resource of knowing. We all have gnosis. And the practice of Gnosticism is to carry your deep intuitive knowing to a high degree of refinement and focus, which you can do by taking on the Gnostic path in its form today. So that's one important point. The other one is to understand, I could dispel a number of errors or misconceptions about Gnosticism, but the main one that I want to make is that you will occasionally read, even in this article here, The Occult Roots of the Russian Revolution, which we're going to discuss a little tonight, you will occasionally read the assumption that the Gnostics were focused on some kind of human divinity, that they believed that we are gods in some sense. And this is not correct. I've said many, many times that Gnostics did not consider that we, as human beings, have a divine identity. They considered that we have a divine intelligence. We have a seed of divine or godlike intelligence, which is called nous. And the practice of Gnosticism is to cultivate nous. And that is also a good definition of occultism. You know, occultism also comes to us, I'm sure you would agree, Frater X, largely tainted by rather ridiculous assumptions.
Absolutely. You know, I think that it can't be stated enough, John, that we're dealing with material that's been compiled by mostly those who were, you know, geared towards discrediting and misinforming the masses about these particular beliefs and systems of approach, spiritual approach.
True. Absolutely true. Yeah. And so we have to take the responsibility, I would say, to all of you who are seriously interested in these subjects. You're going to need a considerable degree of critical scrutiny, and you're going to have to peel back some layers of disinformation and distortion to get to the real essence. But it's certainly, I'm sure you would agree, it's certainly worth it. And when it comes to the word occultism, it's like, you know, woo woo, I'm so scared, you know.
Absolutely.
That means a Satanism. That means doing dirty rituals behind our backs. It doesn't mean anything of the sort, you know. Occultism is just a generic name for the discovery and cultivation of inner potential. It was the root of the human potential movement. That's what occultism is.
Period. Absolutely. You know, and another thing I wanted to say that I also agree with you that, you know, there is no greater way, I think, to honor this system, the true understanding of the system, than in just people's general interest in the subject. You know, because as you pointed out right at the beginning of this conversation, the history of Gnosticism is one of a history of repression, suppression, violent, you know, the violent stopping of a way of life, you know.
That's right.
And this is the greatest way we can restore and bring honor back to the original teachings, I think, just to show interest and to pay attention and be willing to consider what's being presented.
Indeed, I would like to say that those of you who are investigating Gnosticism, if you read my book, it's the only book written by any Gnostic scholar that treats the subject from the point of view of the Gnostics themselves rather than the point of view of the people who defamed and destroyed them, you know.
So absolutely.
You might have a better chance getting to the essence of things, you see.
Yeah, and I, you know, in my own extensive research on the subject, I too am halted over and over again in the material that I look at by that misinformation or misunderstanding that is so common that I'm sure you're going to at least allude to a few of these points as we go along. Go ahead.
And I would add, Frederick, the obvious, which those of us today are able to understand due to our painful education since 9/11, and it is the 11th year already today. Our painful education has taught us that the powers of society and government and corporate activities and education and everything can fall into the hands of the worst people. This is a very hard lesson to face, and it's these kind of people in all fields of life, the controllers, the psychopaths, the dominators, who actually exerted a monumental effort to destroy Gnosticism and to destroy the Sophianic mystery teachings. And why did they exert such an effort that extended over centuries? Because it is the Gnostic and Sophianic message to humanity that gives us the greatest incentive and the greatest support to overcome and defeat those psychopathic control freaks. It is the greatest threat to them. If you want to ask yourself, what is the greatest threat to them? It is our awakening to that divine Gnostic potential in us and to the connection with Sophia, who is the divinity, the living conscious divinity of this planet. And that's why they destroyed it. There's no history anywhere you can find in the world that compares to the genocide and repression that was exerted upon Gnosticism. Why? You know, there must be something really dangerous about it for the dominators, and there is.
Yeah, the realization that the undividable and undeniable fact that we are all connected to Gaia.
That's right, and not only connected, but we can be interactive, and that the intelligence that we have was given to us by her for an experiment of her conception, or to use the Gnostic term in the mystery schools, her dreaming. Dreaming is the technical term we use for the imaginative and material power of an aeon, a divine being. So we live, the human species, each member of us, lives like a character in the dream of Sophia. Right now, you are in her dream. And the fantastic thing about this scenario is that the dream becomes lucid. And she not only wakes up to the fact that she is dreaming us, but we are able to dream with her and interact with her. This is the most powerful psycho-spiritual dynamism that was ever taught to the human race. And it had to be wiped out in order for the current bunch of gangsters to take over. And we're at the turning point. We're beyond the turning point in this game now. And when the reawakening occurs and the connection to Sophia occurs, as the Gnostics themselves lived it, the whole game changes. The whole game changes, inside and outside. So it's a tremendous moment to be alive. But we do have to solve the 9/11 thing, because that is really the deal breaker in this scenario.
You know, and we do find, as you've already made clear, we find that the same perpetrators and the same system is in effect. That we can see that because we see the same patterns of repression. Look at all the government and law enforcement repression of entheogens and other substances that would lead people to this luminous epinoia, to this divine imaginative creativity. You know, there's a reason why these systems are being held back and being made illegal and being, you know, continually criminalized, the activity and the pursuit in that direction. It's the same system.
That is just the case, and I would ask everyone who's united in the, you know, freedom, what does it mean? Hey, come on, let's get along and have a good time. That's all I want to do. That's all I've ever wanted to do. It's really simple. Somebody doesn't want us to have a good time. Somebody doesn't want us to get along. And we have to face these perpetrators and who they are. But my feeling, the song that plays in my heart, the Song of Liberty, is very clear, because I always remember that cognitive liberty is what we are fighting for. We're actually fighting after everything else, after all the corruption and all the deceit is blown away. We are fighting for cognitive liberty, that is to say, the right to have your own consciousness and do with it as you like, as long as it does no harm to others.
And, you know, it's a great transition, I think, in our conversation, because this leads to the topic we've chosen for the evening. And why is it that, you know, we'd find, as this the author of this paper alludes to, this close connection between the Gnostic traditions and social reformation and social change in the Russian society, you know, specifically dealing with this subject?
That's right. That's right. It's a brilliant reference and a brilliant example for us. I hope to show in this talk and the next couple to develop it in detail, and also something people can grasp and use, how important it is to see the mirror of our opportunity now in the Russian Revolution. It is such an enlightening exercise.
And, you know, just because you just alluded to that, John, for everybody listening, we want to make it clear that that's what we're doing here. We're laying the foundation for an examination of these ideas and considering whether there is a cogent connection between these principles, as we suspect and believe there is. And as the author of this paper has alluded to and elucidated in a very well-written piece that I think will be interesting to anybody who hasn't checked it out. You can go to Gnostics.com, I believe, was the website,
right,
where you can download this paper. Just go to the search box and type in Occult Roots of the Russian Revolution, and it'll pop right up, the first thing. That's how I found it. And it puts
it's
out, and it's easy to read.
It's an exceptionally fine article. Now, I have some material myself, a number of books, there aren't that many, that deal with occultism in Russia and the occult background of Russian culture. Has been a tremendously important subject for me, because it was actually the last place that the Sophianic mysteries took refuge, even after they were wiped out in Europe. They was in Russia, and this is a fantastic untold story. So it's tremendously important to understand that background. But this article, which you printed out, it's 15 pages long, is enough for anyone to really sink their teeth into the subject. And I think anyone who reads it will be absolutely amazed by what is in there. And then we can start to draw parallels to where we are today.
And, you know, of course, right in the beginning of the article, as we are about a minute and a half away from the next break, so right at the beginning of the article, we are going to see those points that, you know, people who have an understanding of your approach to Gnosticism like myself, get hung up on the usual misconceptions and misunderstandings about the subject, which right away in the article I noticed, you know, comes right out in the forefront initially. So maybe you'll be able to address that for the folks out there listening.
I would love to address that with a very key point leading into the next segment, if I could, a key point that if you know this, and I came by this very hard, folks, this is a very precious piece of information I would give you. If you know this, your studies and explorations of Gnosticism will be much, much easier.
Great point. That's a very great point, John. I mean, and I find that for myself. And, you know, I do give you a lot of credit here because, you know, I have yet to find any other work like yours that is coming from the same position and that really resonates as truth with me, you know, and I know with others who have been exposed to the material.
Sure.
So I do thank you for that. We really do appreciate the work you've done. So
sure,
when we come back from this break that's just about to come up on the other side, we will continue with author John Lamb Lash from MetaHistory.org, exploring the occult roots of the Russian Revolution and all things Gnostic. We're going to look at it from all angles, especially those that have been worked out by John in his book, Not in His Image, a must-read for the 21st century. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back on Radio Free Humanity here on American Freedom Radio, Voice of the Revolution. John Lamb Lash joins us, and we were, before the break, just starting to lay the groundwork of our discussion concerning, basically Gnosticism in general and its connection, I think, to social revolution and social change, but also specifically an article that we directed everyone's attention to last week, which was The Occult Roots of the Russian Revolution. And so we have John Lamb Lash here to continue where he left off before the break.
Sure. Thank you, Frederick. So I want to cut directly to the chase. I'll give you a big, big warning and tell you how. I can't tell you how much of my time and blood and sweat it took me to get through this. When you start to investigate Gnosticism, you're always going to run into one particular piece of very serious disinformation, which is truly a kind of 9/11 type of mindfuck. It's really, there is a psyops against the Gnostic movement that was set in place by the ideologues of the early Christian church. So when you encounter it, you're going to find many, many, when you read the books, apart from mine, you're going to find many people telling you the same thing, namely this. Well, the Gnostics were a bunch of pagan heretics who thought that the material world was evil, and they considered that the world that we live in was not created by God, the Father of the Old Testament, but was created by some lesser adversary of God, some satanic being. And they taught that the human soul is like a spark of light, captured and trapped in this material world, which is not even the making of the Godhead, but is the product of a lesser, of a satanic materialistic deity. You run into that over and over again from Hans Jonas, The Gnostic Religion, which is the foundation book written before Nag Hammadi, right down into the post-Nag Hammadi material. And I have to tell you, that is not what Gnosticism taught. That is not what you would have learned if you were in the mysteries. Quite the contrary. But that is a very serious lie put in the place of, put at the entrance, and it has misled many people. So I'll give you the key to how to see through that lie. It's very simple. When you read the Gnostic Nag Hammadi text in Coptic, you find the word Kaz, K-A-Z, in Coptic. And that is a transliteration of the Greek word ge, G-E. So the G becomes a K, and the E becomes an A-Z. So it means Gaia, Earth. And when they speak in the Gnostic text of Kaz or Gaia, they distinguish it from cosmos. The Gnostic teaching is very subtle. They didn't say that the material world is evil and the human soul is a spark of light trapped in a dark prison. They said that the material world, Kaz, Gaia, is actually a divine setting. It is the presence of the goddess herself, the wisdom goddess Sophia. But there is a second world we live in. The problem with humanity is we don't live on Earth with our eyes open and our hearts attuned to the presence of the goddess, because there is a false paradigm imposed over that reality, and the false paradigm is what is created by the false, is what is produced or projected by the false creator god, who is called the Yadabaoth, meaning Jehovah, Yahweh, the Archon, the Lord Archon. And so, in fact, you would be, I think, enlightened to know, and I certainly was when I worked it out, that the Gnostics were the first people, A, who used the concept of a matrix, that we are trapped in a matrix, and that it is our, it is a perceptual and ideological programming. They taught that.
That's the term stereoma, is that correct?
Stereoma, right.
Okay.
They used the term stereoma for the false paradigm in which we appear to live, because we are trapped in a matrix. And the second thing that they gave us is they gave us the concept of prison planet. They said that this matrix, this stereoma, which is constructed by the delusional entities, the archons, is like a prison, and the archons are like warders and guardians and gatekeepers. It's like a vast computer game set up as a maze, and we're in this maze, or at least we think we are. And so they did present a dualistic model of our human reality, but it was very, very subtle. And what they claimed was that we can break out of the prison planet and dissolve the matrix by reconnecting with the reality of the divine Sophia and reactivating our own Gnostic circuits. That is the message in a nutshell, and it is powerful. When you get your teeth into it, you find that it is very, very powerful.
It's fascinating, John, because, you know, you were the first one to lay this image down, this whole picture, paint this picture back in 2005, 2006 for me. But, you know, I've found now that we're seeing a new wave of vision that's right in tune with what you're describing. There's a lot of recent publications in the last couple of years that discuss the possibility of planetary objects within our system, like the moon and Saturn, being involved in some sort of intricate clockwork matrix generating system, just like you're discussing, you know. And I can't help but find the parallel in this, and think it's quite remarkable that we're seeing this now, you know, with like I can think of several books off the top of my head that look at that. One of them was called Who Built the Moon by Christopher Knight. Another one's called Humanity, Get Off Your Knees, the new David Icke book. He's talking about the same thing, and he's looking at the same, you know, I mean, he's, I think that he's getting on board with this vision is what I'm saying.
Well, David Icke's a long way from getting on board with his vision.
There well, maybe, are some,
yeah.
Go ahead.
If I might differ with you respectfully on that point.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, we're here to differ. We can learn so much from each other by agreeing, and also by differing and having a good time doing it, you know?
Sure.
Can we just point out, first of all, that the problem with Icke and these other people who are, in certain respects, breaking into this Gnostic view is that they are carrying the Sitchin scenario, and they believe and adopt and promote the idea that we are a slave species whose genetics have been modified by alien beings. And the Gnostic view says that is wrong. We are not a slave species, but we are mind-controlled into believing that we are a slave species. That's the difference.
I couldn't agree more with you on that. I have to give you a little bit of credit for kind of, and I know myself and others sort of, you know, showing us the clarity there, because it is that fact. The bottom line, when you come down to it, if you're going to embrace this idea, you're going to embrace the notion that we are a slave species.
That's right. Fortunately, I've pointed this out before. Whereas David Icke, by one example, for instance, does a tremendous amount to educate us since 9/11 about the machinations and orchestrations of the global system and how we're being deceived in the money system. And I mean, tremendous amount of research. But when he goes into certain other areas, he just loses it. And one of the reasons why he loses it in the area of mythology and ancient mysteries is because he doesn't know anything about that, doesn't have the background, you know? Yeah. So you have to be very selective and use tremendous discrimination today. This Gnostic vision is breaking through. Freighter X. I'm certain it is. I see it as well. But those of you who want to embrace that vision and see if it could be useful to you as a spiritual pathway will need to exert a considerable amount of discrimination and sorting things out. And if I can be helpful in that, I always love to do that because I'm a little bit ahead of the game here in some respects. So I just point out, too, this thing about the moon. I mean, David Dyke is completely off his rocker about the moon. He is. And
so go ahead.
And I would point out something, and I don't know if I've said this before, but, you know, you read Cradle Mutt was a tremendously important voice of indigenous shamanism. The Zulu shaman has said really, really brilliant things. But I would point out to you something that I don't think anybody else has pointed out. Cradle Mutt calls these alien entities who these mind parasites who live in the solar system, which is the stereoma, according to the Gnostic picture of our world, he calls them the Chidori, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they are what are called archons in Gnostic teaching. And get this about Cradle Mutt, he says, well, you know, he's had an intimate knowledge of the Chidori from his tradition, and he's had his own encounters, and he comes out and he makes a statement, which I totally totally accept. Well, these Archon Chidori entities are deceivers. They are tricksters and deceivers, which is absolutely true. And that view is supported by other shamanic voices and other shamanic teachers as well. But then he turns around and he says, well, they created, you know, the moon. Well, where did he get the story that they created the moon? Well, he got it from the Chidori.
From the deceivers. Hold that thought. After this short break, we'll be right back on Radio Free Humanity talking to John Lamb Lash. You go ahead and start us off. I just reached the first thing that halted my attention when I read the article, which was the statement in about the third regular paragraph down, which said, Gnosticism, which flourished in the early centuries of the Christian era. You know, and I immediately was like, wait a second.
Yeah, this is another mistake that we make. People think that just because the Gnostics came to be known at the rise of Christianity, that they only existed at the time they came to be known. And they existed for millennia. The mystery schools existed for millennia before Christianity came on the scene. Anyway, I want to quote this one sentence in the first page here, which says, these political scientists who analyzed the situation argued that the intellectual roots of Russian Bolshevism are a structural repetition of the ancient Gnostic paradigm. A distinguishing feature of Gnosticism is an elusive symbolic interpretation of reality, including history. Now, let me see if I can decode this for you. First of all, if you want to talk about the Russian Revolution, as we'd like to do here, you have to know who the Bolsheviks were. And the use of Bolshevism in this sentence is a bit misleading. The Bolsheviks were the gangsters, thugs, murderers, like the people who are hired today by the banking cartels and by the corrupt elements in the American government. The militarization of the United States and the militarization of the police is a mirroring of the rise of Bolsheviks in ancient Russia. The Bolsheviks at the time of the Russian Revolution are the exact parallel to the thugs and enforcers that we see today, unfortunately, that the corrupt pathological system has put in place in our society. So let's get that clear. The Bolsheviks are really bad news. I would rephrase the sentence in this way because it is a tremendously important sentence. The intellectual roots of the Russian revolt, not of Bolshevism, but of the Russian revolt, are a structural repetition of the ancient Gnostic paradigm. How so? Well, remember in the last section I said that the Gnostics gave us the paradigm or meme of Prison Planet. They gave us the meme of the Matrix. It originates from them. And so what happened in the coming up to the Russian Revolution was that the people in Russia at that time, at the end of the 19th century, realized that they were living in a matrix. They were slaves. I mean, the larger part of the Russian empire was serfs or slaves. Then there was an aristocrat, there a mercantile class, an aristocratic class, and then there was the Tsar's family. And the Tsar is the word, Russian word Tsar comes from the word Caesar.
Sure.
And the Tsarist system in Russia was nothing but a continuation of the Roman Empire. So if you read my book, Not in His Image, you'll find that at the top of chapter 6, I talk about this and I make the connection between the Russian Empire and the Roman Empire. And in fact, you can consider that the Tsarist Russian Empire, which ended with the revolution of 1912, was the latest extension of the Roman Empire at that time into the Eastern or Asiatic world. So just as today we are living in kind of a new Roman Empire, a new Nazi Roman Reich, the Russian people were living in a similar matrix of fear, deception, espionage, and terrorism. In fact, terrorism was born, in a sense, modern terrorism was born out of that environment. And so there's a really strong mirroring and parallel between our moment in time and that moment in time back there. Is that clear so far?
Yeah, and I think you could even go so far as to couple it with a strong classism, which we're seeing
right.
Polarizing in our culture today.
Right, which is totally alien to what I feel as an American. America, to me, is an egalitarian society. People have different resources and different means, but we all get along, we all knock shoulders and pull together. And that spirit of solidarity and that social synergy has been absolutely attacked by the predatory system that's come down. So the revolution, the people's revolution, is about overthrowing that and coming back to the natural synergy of humanity. And if you want to understand how deeply that was felt by the Russian people, go onto the internet and Google Kropotkin, K-R-O-P-O-T-K-I-N, Prince Kropotkin, was a Russian intellectual and aristocrat coming up to the revolution who proposed true anarchy. The true anarchy, he said, is the true social order that we are intended to live, and that it is not, however, chaos and each man for himself, because we have in us the tendency for what he called mutual aid. And he said, because each human being is designed with a spirit of mutual aid, we know that life goes better if we mutually aid each other. Then even if there isn't no government, which is a state of anarchy, no government that's compelling us, we will do the best and we will create a synergistic society. So this kind of idealism was behind the Russian Revolution. It's important to understand the intellectuals who defined the revolution in the way that we today could define our revolution and distinguish them from the ideologues and the plants and the shills and the agents of the banking cartels who were trying to manipulate the revolution. And one of the first things we learn, I want to point out two things that you could learn by going back and reading a little about the Russian Revolution. The first thing is it presents a shining example of a popular or people's revolution that was immediately hijacked.
Absolutely. And this is something we fear. We know this to be true. The thugs always step in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was hijacked in this way. There was a tide leading over many decades to the wish to overthrow the Tsarist control system, which was absolutely monumental and monstrous. It was another version of the old, ye old gangster psychopathic dominators.
So what we're doing, John, right now is we're painting a picture that is starkly different from the Cold War portrait that many people like myself. I mean, I grew up in the Cold War, and as a child, I mean, we always were taught that the people of Russia were subjected to socialism, that it was forced upon them. We're recognizing now that these beliefs that gave birth to the socialism movement or the movement of social revolution that then evolved into the Bolshevism and the socialism we saw in the system, but this was a seed that was cultivated, as you said, over time, over generations, an idea of liberty and freedom born out of Gnosticism.
And that's
this is the portrait we're painting here and now. We're looking at the Gnostic parallels within the occult roots of the Russian Revolution, an article that can be found at Gnostics.com. You can search there for articles to download. I just wanted to make a note to anyone out there who's been following along with this conversation. Anyone who has John Lamb Lash's book or can gain access to it, there is a section in the book for suggestions on reading and research, which can be found on page 410. Of that book. Anyone who wants to take a look at a lot of material, some questions came up on the chat line that mentioned parallels between John Allegro's work and Gnosticism, and John Lash has addressed those issues. They can be found in that section of his book, and there's more reading and research dealing with that subject there as well. So just to direct people into that area in order to gain more clarity on their own. So picking this back up, because we want to have time for John to make his big point here, I want to turn it back over to John to take us further down this road.
Certainly. Thank you, Frederick. So let's get this party started, as Pink says. I just want to give you a number of really stunning parallels. They're very, very simple. This is not, I'm not suggesting that we go on some trip down memory lane and go back into history. One thing about going back into history to look at the Russian Revolution and understand where we are today is that we don't have to go back that far. I'm very much of the opinion that it is misleading and distractive, if not exhausting, to go back way, way back in the ancient past and try to sort things out that happened, say, in Egypt 4,000 years ago to see where we're at today. We don't have to go back that far. There are lessons in the immediate past which I find to be far more instructive. So let me draw you a couple of very cogent parallels. Lodge in your mind this notion of social anarchy and the synergy of mutual aid. This is what Prince Kropotkin taught, and this is one of the ideals that was behind the Russian Revolution as a people's revolution. The Russians at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, were terribly oppressed under a dominator matrix. The people had this spirit of revolt, and so they were compelled by this true sense of social synergy, of the true humanity, and that was perverted into the socialist ideology, which was then turned on them and turned into another dominator system. You know, it's just like what's happening in America with, you know, the neocon program, the Homeland Security, the Patriot Act is turning the ideals of the American society into a dominator system, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's exactly the same thing. Another example is all of us have learned in the last 10 years a very painful lesson. Consider the word ecology and everything it denotes. Now consider the word ecofascism and everything it denotes. Okay? What have we learned since 9/11? We've learned that the true ideal, the true, I prefer to call it the true imperative, not an ideal. The true imperative in the human heart to have ecology in our society and to have an ecologically balanced society has been hijacked and perverted into ecofascism, which is used as a tool of control against us. Okay? The same parallel things happen to the Russian people. One of the very strongest elements in the Russian Revolution that you'll read about was the feeling for the land, for Mother Russia. What did they mean when they talked about Mother Russia? They meant Mother Earth. They meant Gaia. They had a tremendous feeling for the land. And what they wanted to do was form a society based on their bond to the land, Mother Russia. And so there was an ecological aspect to the Russian Revolution. And that was also perverted into fascism. So I'm not praising and teaching socialism here, by the way. Socialism is a horrible disease, but in its inception and in its roots, it was not that.
Can we make that point again, John? That's important, I think, for people listening, the clarity you just made there, that we're looking at the idea of, like you said, social anarchy and the synergy of mutual aid, mutual cooperation.
Exactly.
It's a distinction from socialism as a political system or a governmental
system. Absolutely. Okay. Such an important distinction. You paraphrase that beautifully. Now, let me give you this one. This is a stunner. You know that they turned whole of Russia into the Gulag, right?
Sure.
Solzhenitsyn wrote about it. The horror of the Russian Gulag, right? Gulag, the Gulag Archipelago. Okay, well, the Russian people had the Gulag. Their dream of a people's revolution was hijacked by the Bolsheviks, who were the fascist enforcers of the banking cartels who funded communism. Okay? And they ended up in the Gulag. They didn't end up in a natural paradise of mutual aid. They ended up in the Gulag. Okay? What's the Gulag today? Ever hear of Agenda 21?
Sure.
There you go.
Yep.
You see? Agenda 21 is the ground plan for the American Gulag.
Yeah, in the Midwest, right? That's where they've got the train tracks running.
These corridors, these internment camps, the whole FEMA cover of a program to take the land away from the people, keep it for the elite, herd the people into concentration camps. Now, this is a nightmare. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but this is the nightmare project of the globalist psychopaths. And we're fighting a fucking psychological war here. We have to understand what their psychology is and counter it with a superior vision and a superior psychology. And we can learn so much how to do that from the back, from the mirror of the Russian Revolution. Let me give you another example. What happened in the Russian Revolution? If you just read, I can't recommend any books right now, but I'm going to research it. And the next time I'm going to perhaps suggest a few books to read. You don't have to go bury yourself in volumes. Just get a general picture.
Unlike me.
I'll tell you what you'll see when you get the general picture. You'll see that there were two phases of the Russian Revolution that happened very rapidly. It was like right as a blink of the eye. It came up as a people's revolution. But then when certain parties in Europe, particularly the banking cartels and the Rothschilds and the Illuminati societies that had been founded after 1776, all of these control freaks, saw an opportunity. And so they funded all of the ideological firebrands who appeared on the scene, like Lenin and the others. And they were the handlers of those men, and those men became the handlers of the People's Revolution and almost immediately hijacked it. So I warn you, if there's a People's Revolution coming up in America, be very, very careful to look at it being hijacked from the moment that it gets off the ground.
Yeah, even before it launches. I mean, we know Counter-Interpol tells us that, you know, or COINTELPRO, you know, the American intelligence system of infiltration. I mean, that's clearly still in full effect.
Right. You know, Cass Sunstein is like, he's a bullshit, you know. These people, these White House czars, it's interesting they call them czars, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Remarkable, you know? Right? The parallels very clearly.
The Russian word, which is the Russian form of the word Caesar, which goes back to the Roman Empire. So these czars and these control freaks, they're nothing but gangsters, and the Bolsheviks were nothing but gangsters. But they're the enforcers who work for the corporate governmental fascism and for the international banking cartels today, just as they did in the Russian Revolution. And they turned what could have been an exemplary people's revolution involving a land that encompasses, 11 time zones of this planet?
Yeah.
Yeah. If the Russians wanted to go back and reclaim their land and form a society of mutual aid based on anarchistic principles infused with the Sofianic vision. I haven't even got to that point yet.
No.
They had Sofianic vision, you know,
We'll save that for the last section, last segment. Sure. You can go into that. But, you know, it's another interesting parallel you brought up, John, when you spoke of ecofascism and talk about in the contemporary world today, look at carbon credit, a debt-based perversion of green economy. I mean, they're finding a way to, you know, create the same economy that's destroying our social structure. In using it in the, you know, I'm just speculating here, but the possibility of a carbon credit system, it sort
That's
of
right.
opens the door to, you know, what we're looking at, like a debt-based green economy next. I mean, it's crazy.
That's right. That's
and it's
right.
the same sort of eco-fascism.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest crimes on the planet. is the perversion and hijacking of the ecology movement and turning it into, the Al Gore agenda, which is a complete deception and a lie, and turning it into eco-fascism. And that was already us. But again, it's about Lenin said, Lenin's a great teacher, said the best way to control the opposition is to lead it.
Yep.
Okay.
There it is.
Put that on your fridge, So right, if we're looking around America today and we're saying, wow, it's getting really bad here, Homeland Security, the neocons really pulled off their thing since 9/11. They're putting the screws to us. It's not the neocons, by the way. We'll get into that a little bit later. There's a bigger conspiracy involved here. But they're really putting the screws to us. They're going to militarize the whole United States. If they pull off another false flag attack, as they're very likely to do, that will be the excuse for martial law. Well, a lot of us Americans don't want to live under this, so we can feel the opposition to them forming. Well, they're not stupid. They know that. And they already are setting us up to control the opposition to them. And if we don't have the savvy and the discrimination to see how they're doing that, then history will just repeat itself,
Yeah, every... Well, every new regulation, every new security measure on the simplest level is a sorter of who's obedient and who's not.
That's right.
It's a clear sorter right there.
That's right. There you go. So there is a controlled opposition on the Internet. There is a controlled opposition in the 9/11 Truth Movement. In fact, the 9/11 Truth Movement is controlled opposition to the truth seekers. The great mass of truth seekers, including myself, who want to know the truth about 9/11, who realize that the official cover story is a joke. Well, the official cover story is the front-end loading of the psyops. The official cover story is so ridiculous that anyone in their right mind rejects it and looks for another solution. Well, what do they fall upon? Oh, here, we've got the real solution. It was demolitions planted in the buildings that brought them down in free fall speed into their own footprints, That is a scenario of the 9/11 Truth Movement. It's the leading scenario authored by Stephen Jones and Richard Gage. And it is controlled opposition because it's not true. It's not scientifically true because the buildings did not come down. There was a controlled demolition, but it wasn't controlled by planted explosives or thermite, or, as someone has recently suggested, genetically engineered nanotermites. Okay?
Yeah, and then, the sheer audacity of the official cover story is nothing more than the proof of the confidence they have in their shell game.
Absolutely.
It's proof right there.
Totally. You have got the psyops. We have to understand. And I've been working with Dr. Judy Wood on this. I have a great privilege to be connected with her. We gave a talk already on Grok the Talk together in which we discussed this problem that they already knew. That, the absurdity is a very big factor in psychological warfare. And they use absurdity. They knew that the official cover story was absurd. And so it serves two purposes. The absurdity of the official cover story confuses and thwarts people's thinking.
Of course.
So you lose a lot of people right there. They're controlled. They're totally thwarted in their reasoning powers by the absurdity of it. But then there are others who say, well, I don't buy this absurdity. It's absolutely a lie, and I'm going to look for something else. Aha. They already provide the something else. On the very day that they put out the official story, which is the front-end loading of the psyops into human imagination, they also put out the clues to the controlled demolition thermite theory, which is presented later in the course of time by the controlled opposition. So we really have to snap here, folks. The 9/11 psyops is wearing off after 10 years, and the fog is dissipating. And this is the opportunity to see, to move toward a true understanding of what happened on that day. And the foundation of that, in my opinion, is the work of Dr. Judy Wood, because she is the only person who has done a thorough forensic investigation of what happened at the crime scene. At the crime scene. She explains what happened at the crime scene, right.
So without any more delay, I wanted to let John just wrap up his amazing talk this evening concerning all things Gnostic, and most especially and specifically looking at the occult roots of the Russian Revolution. Please take it away, John Lamb Lash.
Thank you, Frederick. It's my pleasure. I would say that I am very happy to tell you my vision and my conviction, which is that we are in the solution. We are in the solution as long as you understand that there is no solution without the connection to the earth, which is a living, intelligent being. So as long as we move and live into that connection deeply, we are in the solution, which is her solution. The Gnostics called it Sophia's correction. And all we need to do is see how we are in the solution. The thing now is to see how the solution works. Less emphasis now on what the problem is and how we got here. We've learned enough. We've done a tremendous amount of homework in 10 years. I think we know enough about the problem. But now we need to know how the solution is working. And 9/11 is a great key to that. So on the anniversary of 9/11, speaking to the world from Andalusia, Spain, I'd like to offer you a gift. And it goes like this, in the form of a question. How many buildings were destroyed on 9/11 in Manhattan? What is the answer to that? Even in the minds of not in the minds of ordinary mainstream people, but in the minds of those of you who have looked deeply into that event. Well, I think the answer would be, obviously, Building 1, WTC 1, WTC 2, the tallest skyscrapers in the world, were demolished. They didn't fall. They appeared to fall. They were made to appear to fall. But actually, if you look at the evidence photographically and physically, they dissolved into dust. There was no debris. The amount of debris, I would say there was no debris. There was very small debris. So the amount of debris that was found on the ground in the footprint of those two buildings is 20% or less of the actual material mass of the buildings. So, what buildings were destroyed? WTC-1, WTC-2, oh yeah, and then there's that third one, WTC-7. Wow, that's really important. We've got the whole picture now, right? Wrong. I'll tell you how many buildings were demolished on that day in Manhattan. 7. Count them. WTC-1, WTC-2, WTC-3, which was jammed between them, WTC-4, which is off to the side of WTC-2, completely disappeared. Do you hear anyone talking about WTC-4? It completely fucking disappeared. Okay? WTC-5, have you ever looked down at the photographs of WTC-5? It's like cored. It has three massive holes cored in it. I mean, how did thermite planted in the buildings do that? WTC-6, demolished. Now let's get to WTC-7. Oh, but wait, that's proof of controlled demolition because we all saw it fall. It's such a classic example. Just look at it. Did we see WTC-7 fall by controlled demolition? Well, yes and no. We saw it fall by a controlled demolition. We saw the walls of it fall by controlled demolition. But when WTC-7 fell, there was nothing inside. Did you know that?
No.
There was nothing inside. If you look at the aerial photograph of WTC-7, there's no internal debris. Where are there 47 floors of concrete and steel? Where is all the office furniture, the railings of the elevators themselves, the computers? There is nothing. There is just the debris of the four walls and a few beams laid across the ground as sort of a formal token that there was a collapse.
So what is your explanation for this, John?
The explanation I take from Dr. Judy Wood is that the destruction that was accomplished in one day in Lower Manhattan was accomplished by directed energy weapons. By weapons, and that is not space beams. That is, weapons that use interference of a static field with a beam directed from someplace, but not from space or flying saucers. And this use of directed energy is the only thing that explains how this destruction could have been wreaked on that site. So I would say that the greatest anniversary gift we can all give ourselves for 9/11 is to go and look at her book, Where Did the Towers Go?, which presents complete, irrefutable evidence of the crime scene that no one is able to refute or argue. I would point out that before we switch back to our main topic, that no one in the popular front of the 9/11 truth movement has fairly or adequately ever refuted Judy Wood, Dr. Judy Wood. She has been insulted, she has been dismissed, but no one has ever refuted her arguments point by point, because she gives you all the evidence. For instance, I'll just give you one point before I go on. The two towers, WTC-1 and WTC-2, stood in a slurry wall, that is say, in a bathtub, and the foundation of those towers was 70 feet below the level of the Hudson River. And this slurry wall could not have been breached, because if this slurry wall were breached, then the whole of Lower Manhattan and the whole subway system of the city would have been flooded by water coming in from the Hudson. Now you tell me how two 110-story buildings falling on that wall did not breach that wall. The wall was not breached. Why not? Because the buildings didn't fall on the wall. They dissolved into dust. And the only technology in the world that can do that is free energy, weaponized free energy that's capable of molecular dissociation of matter.
So it removes the molecules.
It dissociates the molecules into dust, into nanoparticles. And in those nanoparticles, you find iron-rich spheres of aluminum, iron-rich spheres and aluminum, strong aluminum content, which is taken as the signature of thermite. But that is that's an absolutely false inference.
Wow, and then if what you say is true, then what you have here is a perfect example of controlling the opposition by putting forth the, you know, like you said, by actually stoking the suspicion related to the thermite evidence, and you know, creating a diversionary, you know, false flag conspiracy theory for folks to focus on, all the while taking the attention off the possibility of particle beam weapons being involved in the attack. Which would right away suppose ulterior source of the attack than the official story.
That's right.
Because box cutting wielding terrorists don't have that kind of technology.
That's right. But we know that the military around the world, the American military probably, and not only the American, but other countries, may well have this technology. So this is the bigger picture, and this is what really needs to be seen. We really need to go and look at the crime scene. I mean, it is a shock, and I hope I'm shocking you, and I want to say it again. 7 buildings were demolished.
That is a shock. That is a very pertinent analysis, John.
In an inexplicable fashion and with a precision that you cannot imagine, because the post office was not even damaged except for a few blips on the surface. There were, across the street, there was no damage from the structure of WTC-7, which had its entire inner structure molecularly dissociated before the walls fell. We didn't see it fall. We only saw the walls fall. So this is so important, and Dr. Judy Wood is the only analysis of the crime scene, and as she often says, we have to know what was done and how it was done, that is to say, what technology it was done with first.
Well, John, I'm sorry to say we're at the end of our show. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Please come back and reiterate all these points to us, and everyone stay tuned next week for David Bloom from permaculture.com. Have a great evening, and thanks for listening.